So, my dear devotees, we will now have a little class where the three main speakers, actually, we have only three speakers this time, will introduce their classes, and then we have Kirtan. And by 7:30, we will ask our Prashanta to give us an orientation about the scheduling thing, the scheduling of the entire retreat, and then we will be able to go and take a prasadam in the Iriaj's dining hall. So, in our first session, of Giriraj, we spoke about some guidelines about that will help you to bring out the most of your retreat. Maybe the most important was to first of all understand it's your own retreat. We heard of a retreat by a renowned saint in really only two questions during this time. Who am I and who are you? During this retreat, you should be able to come to the place where the real you addresses the Lord. The you which is not entangled and covered by the many things that are not you, that are just outside desires, conditions, limitations which we have set upon ourselves. The real you should speak, and also the real Krishna, you know, the Lord as he is. We want to receive his answers, or at least feel his closeness, and so on. So for this, we have set up a program that will help you to come to that level. And we will request now the speakers of this program to introduce their subject matter so that we have some little orientation that we can engage with the subject. And I just wanted to say, sometimes it is very helpful to have a little notebook at hand where you can note down something that strikes you. And then later, when you are in Europe, in America, in Latin America, respective places, you can refer to that notebook and get deep inspirations by remembering how you were at this, how you were present at this, at your retreat. It's your retreat. So, may I ask you, Javitarini, to please introduce the audience to your wonderful and exalted subject. I know what it is, and I will make sure that I will be there at the beginning of every session, because yes, it is very exalted. Let us hear the Krishna Katha, which will be presented by Secretary.
For the last 9 years, during our Govardhan retreats here in Govardhan, I have been presenting some kind of a Leela, Krishna Leela, Vrindavan Krishna Leela, divided into five sections so that we can hear something the first night, the second night, the third night, fourth and fifth. And so I have done quite a few of the main leelas in this way. So when I was preparing for this year, I was asking my husband and other people, what should I do? I think I have to find a new topic. So I was thinking, and I thought, perhaps because we have been doing these retreats now for 21 years, it might even be more, I'm not good at math, but we've been doing the retreats for a very long time, and perhaps if I took a topic that I had done previously and redid it, there would be nobody here except Prashanta who would remember from the time previously. So I thought to myself that perhaps what I could do was to present the book, the poem actually written by Srila Jiva Goswami on the advice or request of Srila Rupa Goswami called Sri Madhav Mahotsava. Now, we all, I think, or perhaps most of us know who is Srila Jiva Goswami, that he was the youngest, more or less the youngest of all the Goswami followers of Sri Chaitanya. And he was the one who was given the role of responsibility to elucidate the philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And he also wrote many other books as well. And after the passing of Srila Rupa and Sri Sanatan Goswami in the mid-1500s, Srila Jiva Goswami was given the position of being the guardian of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, practically speaking, not only in Vrindavan, but throughout also Bengal. He lived in the Radha Damodar temple, where our Srila Prabhupada also resided, before coming out of India and traveling to the Western world. So there are times when Srila Prabhupada would say that we have gone to the Western world to bring Srila Jiva Goswami's teachings to the whole world. Other times, of course, he would also mention the glories of Srila Rupa Goswami because he was the uncle of Jiva Goswami, and Jiva Goswami felt as though he was simply acting on Srila Rupa Goswami's behalf. So Srila Rupa Goswami asked Jiva Goswami to write an elaboration on an incident which he had placed within his drama called Dan Keli Kumudi. And that incident took place in the midst of a really loud, raucous argument between Krishna and his suckers, his friends, and Radharani and her very good friends who were supporting her against the demand that Krishna was making that she had to pay some kind of a tax for coming through at Dan Gati here at Govardhan. And so a very transcendentally beautiful, delightful, charming, but rather noisy argument occurred between the boys and the girls, in which Nandamukhi, who is the granddaughter of Purnamasi. Purnamasi is, she's the guru of everybody in Vrindavan. She is Krishna's personified yoga maya, the potency that brings together all the pastime personalities so that they can enjoy in the different rasas or relationships that they share. So Nandamukhi was the one who argued that actually you know, Krishna, that Radha is the queen of Vrindavan. There was a big ceremony and even the Devata ladies from heaven, they came, they honored her and she's the queen of Vrindavan. How can you started Madan. So Srila Rupa Goswami asked Srila Jiva Goswami to elaborate on this beautiful incident. And so I had previously also looked at this work. It's a 9-chapter Mahakavya. That means a great poem, an epic poem. And I had looked at it a little bit briefly, but when I started to work on it this time, I began to realize that it was actually very, very difficult. So I'd like to share with you why it was difficult, because these points may pertain also to yourselves. Firstly, the book, it's 1,200 approximately verses. So to reduce that into 5 short evening readings in itself was a formidable choice. And secondly, the Sanskrit of Srila Jiva Goswami is so intricate, it's like lace work by a master craftsman. It's so precise and so elaborate. And also because it's so intricate, the translation into English comes rather poor. If you read the book, you'll see that you'll be going, now, when did that happen? Oh, really? I thought I read about that over there. And you start going backwards and forwards, trying to find the thread of the story amidst this array of detail. And thirdly, and most seriously for me, was the transcendental magnitude of the subject matter. It was, to be quite honest with you, it's totally beyond my comprehension, and it will also be beyond your comprehension as well. Because here we are hearing about a transcendental festival to crown Srimati Radharani, Queen of Vrindavan, at which the Devata ladies come from the heavenly spheres to perform part of the Abhishek. And it's so mysterious and so beautiful that I was thinking my problem was how to bring this topic to a level that you and I can comprehend without reducing it to something that's within our comprehension. So we sort of say, oh, that sounds like a Sunday feast program, or, oh, that'd make a nice play. And we miss out on the totally divine transcendental elements of this particular pastime. So at a certain point, I was sitting there thinking about this, and I said, this is like trying to put the ocean into a soft drink bottle. It's an unfathomable subject. So that was quite humbling for me in my preparation. But I prayed a lot to Srila Prabhupada that perhaps he would himself, by his mercy, kindly provide yourselves and myself as the power to share something that we urgently need. We urgently need this. It's like, it's the medicine that will save your life. We need it. We need it more than we need food. We need it more than we need sleep. We need it more than we need good health. We must understand what is beyond the mayic material realm. We need to access the spiritual realm, or the chit jagat. And if we don't do that, then we don't know, first of all, what we're missing out on, and second of all, what is awaiting us. And that is so important that I thought that I would read the words of Srila Jiva Goswami himself when he was has made this insignificant creature begin this poetic work with excessive boldness. May the great devotees, experienced in bhakti rasa, obtain satisfaction with this work by the mercy of Srila Rupa Goswami. He said, I am pleased to manifest this new poetic work using the poetic ingredients of guna, rasa, bhava, dvandvi, alankar, etc. to reveal this great festival of Sri Radha's bathing ceremony. So my prayer is that by the divine blessings of Srila Prabhupada, we may be able to somehow or other just get just a drop of an understanding of this magnificent occasion. So I hope that you'll be with me in the evenings, and we shall read and we shall try our very best to share this subject matter with you. Thank you.
Reading it particularly at any particular
itself is interesting, very interesting, but so much is revealed. It reminds me, it reflects so much back, even though it is not a pastime that occurred in Srivrindavan. Practically speaking, the whole Bhagavatam, it leads us to Vrindavan. It also reflects back to Vrindavan, and each pastime really has something to do ultimately with Srivrindavan and the pastimes of Braja. So this particular pastime is very easy to detect its message about going to Vrindavan and how to get there and what we have to do. Because, well, I'll start even telling the story right now, and you may recognize it. In the 69th chapter of the 10th canto, Narada Muni, he had heard that Krishna married 16,108 wives. So he had heard that he had married them all at the same time. So he thought, well, that can be done. You just have a huge hall, 20 times as big as this, and you put 16,000 queens in there, and then one Krishna marries them all at the same time. But he heard that Krishna had married them at the same time, but in different places, which makes it impossible to do, because you can marry them one by one, and it would take some time to marry 16,108 queens, or you can marry them all in one place. But to marry them simultaneously at different places at the same time, is something that only Krishna could do. So Narada Muni, in the 69th chapter of the 10th canto, he wants to see for himself. So there's very many pastimes that go on there, and Narada Muni sees the 16,000 palaces of Krishna, etc. But then in the 70th chapter, which is the beginning of the pastime that I would like to speak of, it's called, does anyone know what the title of the 70th chapter is? I'll give you a hint. I'll just tell you what it is. Someone who is going to say it. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Krishna's daily activities. So we get an idea of how Krishna lived an ideal life, but of course as a king in palaces. But the first thing that he did was he woke up early, by the way, during the Brahma Muhurta time. And then he did auspicious things. He wanted to create an auspicious atmosphere because he was setting an example of how to live a perfect life. So he touched water. He began to meditate. And of course it says he meditated on the absolute truth, which he himself was. So it's not clear exactly how he meditated, but he meditated on the absolute truth. He worshipped the sun and other devatas. He worshipped the elders, the Brahmins, the cows, and he offered charity and decorated cows and offered obeisances to cows. The cows were very important to Krishna, even when he was in Dwarka. And then he touched auspicious items. He touched a brown cow. He looked at cows. Just seeing cows and seeing bulls is auspicious. Auspicious means it elevates the mind. And then he looked in a mirror. That's something we may do. But the difference is, when I look in the mirror, I see me. And he looked in the mirror and he saw Krishna. And then he began to satisfy everyone around him. He satisfied people of all the different varnas. He gave them all gifts. And he greeted and satisfied all his ministers. And then he gave gifts to all his friends. And he also gave gifts to his wives. Every day. He was very intelligent. And then he began to prepare to leave for the Sudama Assembly Hall. So he was in 16,000 palaces, and 16,000 Krishnas exited thousand palaces, and there was one chariot. Sometimes it's described that the 16,000 chariot Krishnas merged into one Krishna just before the chariot. And sometimes the chariots all went, and then before he entered the assembly hall, then there was a merging. But I like the way to describe it is they came out of all the palaces, all the different Krishnas, and they merged into one Krishna, because Krishna does that very easily. They're all expansions of Krishna. And then the chariot driver of Krishna is named Daruka. And Daruka stood before the chariot with folded hands, ready to serve. And then Krishna, with his right hand, he touched Daruka's hand. And using Daruka's hand, as he pushed on Daruka's hand, and that way he mounted the chariot. So what we're going to hear is Krishna interacting with so many different levels of devotees. And watch closely. Watch with your eyes, but watch with your eyes through your ears how Krishna interacts with his devotees. Just imagine what it was like. We can't imagine. When Durga, whose love for Krishna was so great, wanted to serve Krishna, and Krishna took his transcendental hands, which are composed of ecstasy, satchidananda, eternity, bliss. His transcendental body is composed of bliss. And that transcendental body, in the mood of accepting service from Daruka, touched Daruka's hands to mount the chariot. And then Uddhava and Satyaki also mounted the chariot. And Krishna drove to the assembly hall, and then the doors opened, and Krishna walked in. Now Krishna was so effulgent and beautiful. I should mention that when Krishna left the palaces, it's not like the queens were closed the door and that was it. When Krishna left, they were heartbroken. They were heartbroken when Krishna left, because a moment's separation from Krishna is like thousands and thousands, yuga. The blinking of the eye is like a thousand ages. So I'd just like to read. So they would all be standing there with big doe eyes, which one must think of the Braja Gopikas in this way, and just watching Krishna leave. And Krishna turns, he has to turn back and look at them. And their eyes are pleading with him not to leave. And he is on the chariot already with Satyaki and Uddhava, and he has to go. And they're pleading with him through their eyes not to leave. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in the BBT purport, this is his comment. The shy, loving glances of the palace women, hinting at their agitation, implied, how can we tolerate the torment of being separated from you? And here we are in the material world, not at all worried about being separated from Krishna. And I think that's the message of the retreat. Is we should want to go back, enter our relationship with Krishna. The idea here is that because how can we tolerate the torment of being separated from you? This is love. The idea here is that because the Lord was captured by their affection, he smiled, indicating, my dear restless ladies, you are so overcome by this little bit of separation, I'm coming back later to be with you.
smile that captivated their minds. He got away on the chariot only with difficulty. Only with difficulty he freed himself from the bondage of their loving glances. They were glancing at Krishna with love, and he had his duty to do, but he was captivated by their love, nevertheless. And with difficulty, he freed himself from their loving glances. This is Dwarka. Vrindavanam Pratyaja Padavekam Nagatsati. He can't leave Vrindavan. Assembly hall, which protects those who enter it from the six waves of material life. As the Almighty Supreme Lord, these are the verses, would see himself upon his exalted throne, he would walk into the assembly hall, and he would mount and seat himself on the throne, and he shone with his incredible effulgence. And that incredible effulgence, that brilliant effulgence, captured the mind, invigorated the mind of everyone who was present. He shone with his unique effulgence. He illuminated the entire hall. And then, surrounded by the Yadus, who are lions amongst men, so powerful, that best of the Yadus appeared like the moon amidst stars. And then, a show would begin. There was serious business that they were going to have to contend with, but yet everyone's mind had to be, first of all, brought together so that they could think in a common way, and also it had to become light and happy to confront the day's business, the day's service, the day's work. So jesters would come out, magicians would come out, entertainers would perform, dancers would dance. They would dance and sing to the sounds of madangas, and it was joyful. It was amazing. Poets would come out and read poetry, and they would recite the Lord's glories. And then Brahmins would enter, changing the atmosphere from lightness to heavy auspiciousness. They would recite Vedic mantras. And they would tell stories of past heroic kings to inspire all present who were Kshatriyas to be heroic. And then, suddenly, Chatraika Purusha Rajan. So one person, and Rajan means Raj Cricket, is hearing this from Sukadev Goswami. Agato Purvada, Apurvadarsana. One person was there who no one, Apurvadarsana, no one had ever seen before. Vigyapito Bhagavata. message that in this amazing assembly hall, that the message were from the kings, 20,000 kings who had been imprisoned by Jarasandha and wished that messenger to deliver to Krishna. And in as this pastime unfolds, what I found was there were so many relevant instructions to me, and I hope they'll be relevant to everyone else as well. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Swati Deve, Gauravani Pracharine. bulls and calves on the road creates a kind of darkness, indicating that Krishna is returning home from the pasture. Also, the darkness of evening induces the gopis to meet Krishna. Thus, the pastimes of Krishna and the gopis are covered by a kind of transcendental darkness and are therefore impossible for ordinary scholars of the Vedas to see. So the verse says that superficial and academic engagement with Krishna can also be superficial, is not enough or sufficient or powerful enough to go through that protective covering of darkness with which Krishna has covered himself and his transcendental pastimes. It's a very poetic rendition. Those who walk through Vrindavan know that when you come to some very dusty areas, the dust comes up in clouds and it's not possible to see who's coming and moving in the dust. Or those who have walked in the night through Vrindavan know that the night it can be very thick here. It cannot be perforated by a needle even. It's so thick, the darkness, because they don't have street lights usually. And then it's a dark moon night. It's really dark. So Krishna is difficult to understand. I like when Jagatarini said she felt she had to put an ocean into a little bottle, and she put a little Australian sarcasm in it, a soft drink bottle, perhaps referring to that in ISKCON we are used to everything soft, understandable, and minus transcendental intricacies. So the Krishna is difficult to understand, and he is not always willing to give bhakti to those whom he feels they should not understand. gathered here a guideline for us to follow. We will come to subjects like eagerness. We will come to subject matters of the personal darshan of Krishna. And we will not even stop before we will come to subject matters of serving Radha Krishna in the mind. We will go to subject matters that are known in our movement as deep subject matters. But we will always do this in a way as to unfold Prabhupada's and our tradition's perspective on them, so that we can, with our own discrimination, see what is placed before us by Rupa Goswami as a gift, and also find out where we are able to enter the vast palace of his teachings, and with a purpose to go forward and move to the next step. I would like to end this little thing by reading you a verse which comes in the glorification of Rupa Goswami. This verse tells how important and foundational and essential Rupa Goswami's teachings are for us. It says, tried to build the Tower of Pisa on a beautiful sandy beach. Do you know what happened? But it didn't fall down. Mostly these towers fall down that were built on the sandy beach. So anyone who abandons Rupa Goswami's lotus feet and still hopes to attain Radha Rani's service may as well try to erect towering building Shana comments that anyone who hears these verses, his heart will become influenced. Even his heart will melt. In fact, these prayers can make stones melt, or not to speak of hearts. So, yes, my hope is that you will receive, first of all, information from these, from the first part will be very informative, and the last part of these lectures will be very transformational, hopefully, and insightful, hopefully. Hopefully, we can only pray to the reaction of Srila Prabhupada. And yes, I hope it will nourish you very deeply. Thank you very much. We will have these meetings under the same trees where we entered started our retreat today. Good. Hare Krishna.